You're listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Thanks for joining me on episode number 10. Special shout out to everybody at 12 Ounce Sports Radio. Happy to be broadcasting with you once again. A lot of things going on today. We're going to talk some NBA news, the Kawhi Leonard injury. We got the NCAA tournament, of course. We also have a gentleman by the name of Corey Left. He will be joining us to help us understand the financial impact these Cinderella runs have for small schools like UMBC or Loyola Chicago. But first, right now we are joined by the switch hitting, base stealing, laser throwing, outfield wall climbing, center fielder for the New York Yankees, the one and only Aaron Hicks. Hicks, how you doing today?
I'm good, brother. How about you?
I'm feeling good, man. Excited to have you here. Man, it's a good time to be Aaron Hicks. I don't even know where to begin, but let's try this. This time last year, you were up for one of the last starting positions with the New York Yankees. You weren't able to break in. But now, 2018, come opening day, you will be in the center field grass for the New York Yankees. How does it feel to have that job?
It's awesome, man. I mean, there's been a lot of great players play there, and I'm excited to be added to that list to play center field for the New York Yankees.
Now, I want to go back to 2017 for a second. You were having a career year, a career high in home runs, career high in RBIs. But on the other hand, you had some setbacks, had some injuries, had to go to the DL's list on two separate occasions. How would you describe your 2017 season and that journey?
It was an awesome journey, man. I was playing the best I possibly can, and, you know, I was actually showing people what I was able to do. So, I mean, it made me excited to be able to play that way and ultimately be a big part of the team to help win ball games, which is very important. And, you know, it felt good to be that type of player that I know I can be.
Now, I saw you this offseason. You did a video with the MLB. Man, you look like a man on a mission. Now, when you sat down with your team, your brother, and your trainer, like, what are some of the goals you guys set out? What were you looking to accomplish this offseason?
This offseason, I just wanted to get in the best shape possible and stay healthy throughout the whole year. That's the whole plan for this offseason, so I went out, got a new trainer named Abdul Silla, and he pretty much changed everything for me. My diet plan got strict, and the way I trained was all baseball-related training. I got faster. I got a little bit bigger, obviously, from the picture.
right. I've seen it.
It was a fun off season, you know. It was the first time I had a really fun off season, and it was awesome.
We are joined by New York Yankees outfielder Aaron Hicks here on WBH Radio. Now, Hicks, when I was in the clubhouse, to a man, everybody talked about your golf game. Now, you guys never took me to the course, but I won't hold that against you. But help me understand, how can we quantify for the audience how good a golfer you were? I mean, like, what's the best round? What's your handicap? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I grew up playing golf. So, I played competitively a lot. So, my best round is a 64. My handicap is a 0.7. I'm all right.
Now, Hicks, tell me about a time, like, what's the most fun you had playing golf? You know, maybe you were on an exclusive course, you had some great company, or, like, just tell me, when's the most fun you ever had playing the game?
Most fun I ever played a game. Man, I think it had to be this year.
Right.
This year, I had a lot of fun. I was having to play golf this offseason with CeCe, Sabathia, and Dexter Fowler, and Mike Harkey. It was awesome. It was a fun group to be in, and it was fun just hanging out with the boys.
Right, Mark Harkey, pitching coach for the New York Yankees. Now, Hicks, in the clubhouse, a lot of guys have golf clubs in their locker. Everybody claims to be a golfer. But besides yourself, if you had to choose one person from the Yankee organization, who else could really play out there?
Who else can play? Adam Warren can play some golf. I haven't played with him yet, though. But I hear he's a close second. and you know what? Didi is awesome to play golf with.
Didi Gregorius, okay.
Yeah, he just started playing golf, and it's fun to play with him. He's awesome.
We got Aaron Hicks here on WBH Radio. Now, I was speaking to your brother. Shout out to the big homie Joe Hicks, Long Beach's finest. And I was asking him, what you guys been up to? And he said, nothing really, just baseball stuff. And then at the end, he kind of threw in there, oh, yeah, we just signed with Jordan Brand. I'm like, hold on, bro. You can't just sneak that in on me. So, Hicks, first of all, congratulations on that partnership. And talk to me, man. How did that deal come about?
I just kind of talked to my agent about it and was telling him that, I really like the Jordan Brand. You know, I see it every day with CeCe and Devin Betances.
Right.
So I was like, you know, I wanna have that type of fire on my on my cleats. Is there anything that we can make happen? I know. In order to be the Jordan Brand, it takes a lot. So we sent a call over, and they look for a player like me to be on the field every single day, and they rip their brand. And I really appreciate being a part of the team, because the team is awesome.
The team is definitely awesome. I think that speaks volumes about what they think of you and your game for them to pick you up. Now, when I was growing up, my favorite pair was whichever got me the most attention from the girls, right? But as I've grown up and matured and really took a step back, I'm a fan of the Jordan 1. I like the classic feel, the classic look. Which was your favorite pair growing up?
Like my favorite pair growing up? I love the 11s, man. The 11s. That's my favorite pair. I love wearing them. I like that look. That look. It's a clean look.
That's the patent leather ones, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is a clean look. You can't go wrong with that. You got a favorite color you like?
I mean, anything with the Jordan that's black and red is
right.
It's fine.
The classic look, the classic feel. Mm-hmm. We got Yankees outfielder Aaron Hicks here. Now, Hicksy, I want to take you back to April 20th, 2016. You're playing left field for the New York Yankees. You make a great catch. You throw a laser to home plate to get the runner out. It's a great play in itself, but not only that, it ended up being the hardest thrown ball ever recorded during the StatCast era at 105.5 miles per hour. Now tell me, when's the first time you learned of what you had just accomplished?
I guess just that night.
Nobody, you know, when... did somebody come in the dugout and tap you on the shoulder like, yo, Hicksy?
Nothing like that. It kind of just... at night when I left, when the game was over, and kind of the reporters were talking about it, just throwing the horse through the ball, and recording it. I mean, it was awesome, growing up, I always had a pretty good arm, so I don't know, it's kind of surreal to be able to throw a baseball that hard.
Yeah, Hicksy, I would have definitely came like, yo, Hicks, man, you just went 105 miles per hour. Now you have a teammate in Aroldis Chapman who's known for throwing heat. Did he ever come and challenge you like, yo, man, I want that record back?
Nah. Tubby does throw hard, and that's his job to be able to throw baseball as long as you're close to the team and get people out. So, I would never challenge Aroldis Chapman in throwing balls as hard as I can.
Right, Hicksy, I'm going to get you out of here on this last one. You are one of my favorite players because of your versatility. Wow, what you could do in the plate, what you could do in the field. I want to ask you, what do you enjoy most? Is it a big at-bat, or is it climbing that wall to snatch a home run from one of the opposing batters, man? Which do you enjoy most?
Man, that's a hard question, man. That's a hard question. I mean, it's the best of both worlds. I mean, I feel like, For me, having a home run is an amazing feeling. You know, not too many players can do that and do it consistently throughout a whole year. I mean, because there's not that many opportunities that come up. So I would say robbing a home run would be my favorite part of the game.
Oh, yeah. But luckily for a talented player like you, you don't have to make the choice. You can do both. But, yo, Hicks, you and your family have always been amazing to me. I want to say thank you, man. I look forward to watching you play every day. Have a great season.
All right, man. I appreciate it, bro. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it, bro.
Yo, that was New York Yankees center fielder Aaron Hicks. Yo, New York City, we got us something special there. The talent is without question. Switch hitter, base runner, defender. Man, check out some of his highlight tapes. That boy climbing the wall like Spider-Man out there, bringing back catches. This offseason, he took his body to another level. And now, Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, they giving him the ball and say, yo, you are everyday guy. So with the talent and the opportunity to play every day, I think we in store for something special. I really do. Aaron Hicks and the Yankees take the field on Thursday in Toronto against the Blue Jays. I want to take a second to send some well wishes to Greg Bird, the first baseman for the New York Yankees. He had surgery on Tuesday. Want to wish him a speedy recovery. Let me tell you about my experience with Greg Bird. We were in spring training in 2017. I was working with the New York Yankees. And in spring training, you drive around the different cities playing opposing teams. Different cities in Florida. We're in Tampa. The Red Sox are in Sarasota. I forget what cities. But so we would get on the bus every day and go to play a different team. And the organization puts the younger players and younger staff on the bus. All right. I mean, we don't want to bother the veterans with the bus. Let them just stay at the home stadium, work out, and then go home. So I would travel to these road games, and it would be the young studs, again, like Judge and Hicks, and Greg Bird. So I would be at these stadiums watching this baseball, and it seemed every other day Greg Bird would smack a home run. Some days he smacked two home runs. I'm like, yo, who is this dude? This dude is a beast. This dude is phenomenal, man. He has smacked two home runs, bam, bam. And then coming into the clubhouse by the fifth inning, well, I catch you guys back at the stadium. Got my own ride. Take care. Like, yo, that's my kind of guy, man. Come handle business and he out. In fact, he led all of Major League Baseball during that spring in home runs. It was him and Bryce Harper tied for eight. So we were expecting great things that season. But unfortunately, he had some injuries. In fact, in July of last year, he went to the organization and said, I'm not feeling the greatest. Something's not right. They sent him to doctors. They couldn't figure it out. And then finally, somebody figured it out. Hey, he has an issue. He has an extra bone in his foot. Damn. So it's great they found the issue. But the bad part is, has to go under the knife. So when that happened, that's in July, August. People say, oh, nah, we won't see Greg Bird again. He's done for the season. The media wrote him off. Fans wrote him off. People in that organization wondered if he would be able to make it back. But sure enough, Greg Bird worked his way back to be a part of the active roster. Not only be a part of the roster, but to make the playoff roster and be the first baseman for the New York Yankees. That was phenomenal. Just weeks earlier, he was under the knife, and here he is back. And playing meaningful games for the Yankees. And he had a great postseason run. And the culmination of that was in the American League Division Series. Third game against the Cleveland Indians. The New York Yankees were able to win 1-0 in a tightly fought game. And the difference in that game was a Greg Bird home run. A home run. From a gentleman just weeks ago was under the knife. We didn't know if he was coming back. Just phenomenal. He hit it off Andrew Miller, too, who was the Indians' best reliever. Now, when I was in the clubhouse, we would never go to a play and say, yo, good game. You know why? Because as the support staff, we are supposed to be a staple of consistency. If I go to you one day and say, great game, but then the next game I walk past you and not say a word, you could interpret that as a middle finger or, damn, I suck today. So that's not what we're there for. We just there to support them, boom. Make the environment their safe haven. But after Bird hit that home run, on the biggest stage in the MLB playoffs in Yankee Stadium, I had to seek that dude out in the clubhouse, man. Extended my hand, gave him a hug. Yo, congratulations, Birdie. You know why? Because I knew what it took for him to fight back to get to that place. I knew the setbacks. I knew the journey. I knew the hard work that it took. I knew about the doubters and the naysayers that he had to fight through. So, Greg Bird, if you hear this, I'm wishing you well. You done made the comeback before. You could do it again. In fact, if we look at Steph Curry took him a while to get out of the box on his career, really get started, having to deal with ankle injuries. And we saw how that played out. Two-time NBA champion, two-time MVP. So my man Bird will be back. What's been going on? Got the Final Four coming up. Should have some good matchups. We just came off of a weekend where we saw some good college basketball as well. Had the Sweet 16, the Elite 8. Still got a Cinderella story in there, Loyola Chicago. And let me talk about Loyola Chicago for a second. When I watch basketball games, I like to really just see what's going on in the court, come up with a theory, and then I'll go to the stats and the stories and see if they match up. And when I watch Loyola Chicago play, I say, dang, that's a team who at any given time puts five people on the court who know exactly what the hell they should be doing. Know exactly what their job is. Now, you would think that was common, but it isn't. Shoot, in your office right now, you got a team of people and you know everybody don't know what they need to be doing. You want to give that job to the guy in the cubicle next to you, but you know, he won't get it done. The same happens in sports. But Loyola, right now, all five guys are on a string doing what they need to do. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And my belief is that comes from an experienced team, a team of upperclassmen, a team of guys who've been around the game a little longer than a pimple-faced freshman. So I said, let me check this roster. And sure enough, that's what I saw. Towns is a junior. Kuster's a junior. Richardson's a senior. Jackson's a senior. Ingram's a senior. Guys who have a sort of a next-level understanding of the game of basketball than some of the younger teams. I'll give you an example. When Loyola swings the ball around, boom, 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 pass, 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 when their players catch it, they catch it in a position as if they're about to shoot it. Right? We call that the triple threat position. We call that the scoring position. They catch it, and they act like they're about to shoot it, or they might pump fake it. You know what that does to the defense? That makes the defender say, oh, snap, this guy's about to shoot. Let me close out on him. So when the defender's closing out, that opens up lanes to get to the rim. That opens up opportunities to pass to a teammate. Because now you got the defense moving. You got the defense thinking. You got the defense on their heels. So that small little detail allows teams like Loyola, who may not be the most talented, allow them to get by. And again, I think that comes from this team being a little bit more mature than some of the guys they're competing against. When we talk about basketball development, especially at a young age, 2 and 4 years is a major difference. So when you bring a 14-year-old and you talk about a 16-year-old, those guys may be miles away from each other as far as talent and skills. Because in those developmental years, they're like dog years. 1 or 2 years is 7, 14 years of dog years, you understand? So when you got these 19-year-old kids coming out of high school playing against an older team in Loyola Chicago, where guys are 21, 22 years old, that's a major difference. And we can go back to last week when I had my guy Steven up here. We said the college game is different than the pro game. The college game is a little bit more scientific. You gotta play a little bit more chess. Your athleticism alone won't carry you through the day. I believe that's why we have underdogs that are able to succeed in college. Because you get a smart team in college, you can make things happen. With the zone defenses, with the traps, you can make things happen. And I think that's why Loyola's been able to be successful. Loyola and Sister Jean. Sister Jean getting her shine on, ain't she? Didn't she get her own pair of Nikes last week? Man, we knew that was coming. I remember, it was last weekend when I saw them pushing her in a wheelchair. I saw she had those sneakers with the two Velcro straps. I remember when I had those when I was younger, 8 years old. I hated tying my shoe. But I was like, yo, Sister Jean could make a fashion statement and bring those back. Y'all know fashion always goes in cycles. I wouldn't be surprised if you see folks out there with the double Velcro shoes. Nova will also be joining Loyola in the Final Four. Now, my man Steven told me about this kid, Jalen Brunson. And Jalen Brunson was a man amongst boys this weekend. Specifically on Thursday when they toppled West Virginia. Prior to the game, I had saw a story about Jalen Brunson is a son of an NBA player, a dude by the name of Rick. Rick played for about 8 teams in the NBA. He was here in New York for a while. He played for the Knicks. Cut year after year after year. And he vowed that, yo, my son is not going to go through that life. So he went to the son. He said, do you really want to be a pro basketball player? Son said, yes. So he said, yo, I'm about to put you through the ringer. It ain't going to always be easy. So we talked about their relationship coming up through junior high school and high school, how Jalen could have a great game. After the game, his dad still had him in there running suicides, running drills, working on different parts of his game. And fans and the boy's mother, like, yo, man, Rick, don't you think you're doing a little bit too much? He said, no, man. I've been in these professional locker rooms. I know what it takes. I don't want my son to be an NBA journeyman getting cut, wondering if he's going to be able to feed his family. If he's going after this title of being a pro athlete, we're going to do it the right way. They talked about how his dad would show Jalen footage of how Kobe Bryant was a leader on the court when his team faced adversity. It's not the time to get upset at your teammates and scold them. He showed a video when Kobe would come to the timeout with his hands like, yo, don't worry, guys. I got this. I'm going to take us to the promised land. So as I was watching Jalen perform on Thursday, I kept thinking about that article and the things that they had worked on. First off, Jalen has this like stoic demeanor. This is business. I'm not here to play. And if anybody knows me personally or have seen me play, yo, that's what I like. Militant. Militant. We not jumping for joy after every basket. Nah, the job ain't done. We here for 40 minutes. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. When the defender backed off Jalen Brunson, he rose up, shot the three. Bang. When the defender played him close, he crossed him up, went to the rim. When they put a little defend on him, Jalen took him in the post and scored over top of him. You know what I call that, ladies and gentlemen? I call that being unstoppable. Unstoppable. Now, you could go to any park in America and you're going to run into a dude that said, yo, man, you can't guard me. Can't guard you? You can't even put the ball in your left hand. Can't guard you? You can't even hit a jump shot outside of the paint. You're not unguardable. But the game Jalen was able to put together on Thursday, that's unstoppable. Whatever y'all going to throw at me, I got an answer for it. Y'all playing me coast, pew, going to the rim. Y'all backing up, knockdown. Little guy, put him in a blender. He finished that day with 27 points, going 8 for 15 from the field, to include 3 for 6 from three-point land. That's taking care of business. That's taking care of business. And it was just phenomenal to match that with the article I had read about how they just shot jump shots, jump shots, jump shots after jump shots growing up. His dad had this drill called 5-4-3-2-1. He had to hit 5 three-pointers from 5 different spots, 5 in a row, One spot, five in a row. Second spot, five in a row. And then once he did that, he had to come back around, hit four in a row, then three in a row. So no wonder that kid was able to rise up and knock down three-pointers like nothing. He had prepared for that moment. Great performance by him. Great performance. And then in the second game of the weekend, the stats wasn't there, but the leadership was. Same demeanor. I'm going to find a way to get this done. I'm going to figure out a way to get this done. And now Villanova's playing in their second Final Four in 3 years. I heard that Duke-Kansas game might have been a game of the weekend. I missed it. I missed it. But Duke is always a tough out, man. That's why everybody hates them, right? Because they always in that mother. Always in there. And that dude Marvin Bagley, I just swooped in and saw highlights every now and again. I saw pieces of the first game they played. Shoot, he might still be hanging on the rim. It seemed like he was dunking on everybody the whole weekend. Shout out to Kansas, man. They're going to be back in the Final Four. But I just walk away impressed by Duke, honestly. Like year after year. And seeing Duke always in it makes me look at Coach Cal and the lack of production he has over at Kentucky. Now, it's no secret I'm not a big fan of Coach Cal. I got podcasts in the past with me preaching about how I think he's a baby, he lacks accountability, he always has excuses. But I don't want to preach today. I just generally want to ask the questions. Please, like, Kentucky, are y'all not finished with him yet? Are y'all not finished with him yet? When asked about the repeated, I guess, subpar performances, Cal says, well, I'm getting these kids to the NBA. I'm helping them get out of poverty. Cal, that's great. That's great for that young man and his family and his community. Shoot, it's even great for you and your network. We see you at the NBA draft, five NBA players in the first round, watching you smile, take pictures, hop from table to table. But what about the University of Kentucky? What about the president who is paying you to win championships? What about the athletic director that's paying you to win championships? What about the people of Lexington, Kentucky? Now, I've never been to Lexington, but I heard it's a great American city. People out there minding their business, working hard. What is it? Faith, family, and Kentucky basketball. Cal, they paying you to compete. And you robbing them, leaving them high and dry. You throwing kids in the NBA. That's great, but you leaving the university and its fan base behind. If you want to just have an NBA factory, go to a school who doesn't really care about college basketball. From what I understand, Lexington and that fan base actually cares about the game. Everybody knows the great history with Kentucky and how that community lives and breathes with that team. So for you to not perform year after year and try to give them a consolation of, well, we got guys in the NBA, that ain't enough, man. You robbing them high and dry. That's selfish. Calipari, the supporters say, well, he got a national champion. Man, if I give you 100 darts, I would, and you throw them at the board, I hope you hit one. And he talks about the one-and-done nature of sports, college basketball, and how it's hard to get cohesion and to build a program. And Coach Cal, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's why I brought up Duke. For a long time, Duke was a school where they counted on their players being there for 3-4 years. Whether Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Nolan Smith, these guys stayed a long time. And then the college landscape changed. It was more one-and-done talent. And that's when we seen Duke take a step back for a while. They took a step back for a while, but they adjusted. Coach K said, you know what? I think we can find some one-and-done kids that fit in to what we believe in and what we do at Duke. And now they're back. Shoot, Coach K had a one-and-done player who can't even get minutes in the NBA right now. That's Jahlil Okafor. He managed to win a national championship with him. So don't give me the one-and-done excuse. You got to adjust fire and get it done. At Duke, you got Marvin Bagley. You got the star freshman, but you also sprinkling some seniors, Grayson Allen. But whatever it is, Kentucky and Coach Cal, you should not be home while Loyola Chicago is still playing. Not with your donors, your resources, your facilities, your big-time Nike contract. No way. If you're going to lose, it should be to other NCAA blue bloods like Kansas, like Duke, like UNC. That's it. Not teams like Kansas State that's in your rear view. You should not be going down to them. Lexington, man, I'm turning my focus on y'all. Get somebody in there that cares about your city, your program, and your school. And not just being the most popular guy at the NBA draft. You're listening to WBH Radio. This is William Holly. Catch me on Twitter at WBH Radio and the YouTube channel of the same name. Everybody at 12 Ounce Sports Radio, thanks for having me. If you're a show on this station, please reach out to me so I can say hello, follow back, whatever. I'm really bad with the social media, but hit me up and we get that done. What the hell is going on in San Antonio with Kawhi Leonard and the San Antonio Spurs? All types of stories coming out. Kawhi doesn't trust the organization. The organization is out to get him. It came out last week that they had a team meeting where the players kind of went to Kawhi and said, "Yo, Kawhi, what's up? You coming back or not?" And then after that meeting, Manu Ginobili came out and said, "We have to conduct ourselves as if he's not coming back." And I had no problem with that. That was Kawhi talking to the players who were on the field to play, on the court. "Yo, guys, we need to put our blinders on. Can't be looking to our left and right for somebody to save us. No, we need to just go to work with what we have here now." I had no problem with that. But Tony Parker came out and said, "Yo, I had the same injury. In fact, mine was 100 times worse." Wow. Tony, what you trying to do? Shame the dude into playing? Huh? What you trying to embarrass him? You trying to prove that you tougher than him, that he should have been back? I never seen a teammate throw the other under the bus like that, especially as it pertains to injury. Especially for a dude with a resume like Kawhi. Kawhi is the reason you rocking one of them shiny rings, Tony Parker. Son, if Tony says something like that, he going to have to see me in the locker room. "Yo, bro, hold on. Yo, don't talk about my injury. You talking about my money, my family. I take stuff like that personally. And my injury was 100 times worse. Do you know what Kawhi's feeling?" So that I had a big problem with. And we give Pop all his credit of being a great leader. Let me see him iron this out. But still in all, that situation is weird. Let's talk about what we do know so far. We know the Spurs is an organization that's always been patient with their stars being injured. We've seen them pull Tim Duncan from a playoff series. I've seen them sit David Robinson. They've been patient with Mono. They've been patient with Tony. So we know that about the organization. On the other hand, what do we know about Kawhi? That he wanted the realest in the league. That he's a finals MVP. That he's one of the meanest, toughest out there. He's the guy that guards LeBron and KD and guys like that for the whole game. Not just in the fourth quarter on a big possession. Nah, he's doing it on both ends for the whole game. One of the few that still plays like that. So we know he ain't no punk. So what's going on here? Nah, I'm genuinely asking because I don't know. But I guess it's up to me to come up with a theory, right? So, yo, I played with this dude before in my college career. Dude by the name of Tony Vails. Shout out to Tony Vails, man. A Brooklyn kid. One of the toughest dudes I know on the basketball court, away from the court. From LG Brooklyn. And he was also a charismatic kid on the floor. He talking his smack, waving to the fans, sticking his tongue out. Like, he was fun to see. And then one day, yo, he got hurt. He hurt his ankle. And the school said, yeah, he's okay to play. So we kind of like, yo, Tone, we ready for you, bro. And he just had this look in his eye like, yo Will, like, Will, I ain't ready yet. Now, I just gave you his resume. He ain't no punk. He the type of dude, before they even tipped the ball, he got 20 points in the book. Like, he was the real deal. So what was it? I think it was just a mental thing. Like him, like Kawhi, these guys are used to walking in the gym and being the most athletic dude. These guys are used to walking in the gym and being able to do whatever they want, when they want, on demand. So now they feel like strangers in their own body. Hold on, this ain't my body. Kawhi is like, yo, the last time I felt good, I was in Golden State up 20, handing it to Steph Curry and KD. I ain't coming back till I feel like that. Say, imagine Iron Man without his suit. They like, yo, what is this? And I've been around Kawhi. Kawhi got that bow-legged Dominique Wilkins, I'm the most athletic dude in the gym, can't nobody see me bounce. So if you take that from him, I think it's just a mental thing. And I think it's going to take him some time to get over that. He might be waiting for his body to come back. It might come back, but it may never come back. That could be because you're getting older. That could just be attrition, wear and tear of a professional athlete. But I think for the guys who really rely on athleticism, it's harder for them to get over. A guy like Paul Pierce, whose game isn't predicated on athleticism, oh, my knee hurt, yo, wrap it up. I'm going to get out there and figure it out. So I think that's what we're really experiencing. Somebody that's used to being Superman who's now a stranger in his own body, and hopefully he gets over it. People have talked about, well, he's changed. He's been different since he changed agents. His uncle's now leading his team. It could be because of his uncle, but it could also be because guys are maturing. What you cared about at 19, it's different now that he's 23 or 25, whatever. You know, his priorities might be a little bit different. You know, he might be a little bit more paranoid. In the past, he would have took pops in the organization and ran. Now he's looking around. He's not sure what is what. So I think it's a confluence of things. Scared about his body. He's getting a bit older. He might be paranoid. You got all these things going on in the media, social justice, and who can you trust and who's not against you. It could be a lot of things going through that young man. But for anybody to question his ferociousness, his tenacity, his desire to play basketball, I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt. For real. Because if you're going to question that dude who don't say a word, just goes out and destroys everything in front of him, y'all going to question him. Jeez, ruthless. Y'all a tough crowd. Y'all saw that they had some protests at the Sacramento Kings game. Sacramento Kings fans joined arms and created a barricade around the stadium. They were protesting the shooting of an unarmed man in Sacramento. His name was Stephon Clark. He was killed in his grandmother's backyard. Unarmed man killed in his grandmother's backyard. He was shot 20 times by law enforcement. Now, keep in mind, I didn't say he was an unarmed black man. If you are one of these people who want to keep your head in the sand and believe that racism doesn't exist, go ahead. I'm not trying to convince you otherwise, because personally, I don't have the energy for you. But if you are somebody who has no compassion for an unarmed person being killed in his grandmother's backyard, being lit up by 20 bullets, unarmed, got lit up by 20 bullets. If you don't have any compassion for that, man, go the other way. When you see me cross the street, man. So I was proud of that crowd for jumping into action. So many times when people are unhappy about something, nowadays the thing is to just have outrage on Twitter. Yo, Twitter ain't solving any problems, man. You got to jump into action. And by forming that protest, you know what happened? Those ticket holders couldn't get inside, so they couldn't buy jerseys. They couldn't buy beer. They couldn't buy pretzels. Yeah. You affecting the king's bottom dollar. You affecting the tax dollars of that local government. Now you're going to get people's attention. The reason I learned about the story, because the king's owner got on the mic. Oh. Y'all start affecting his money, so now he jumped out there and grabbed that mic. Most other times, people be hush. I'm reading a book by Dr. Harry Edwards, sports sociologist. He was the man behind the motivation for the Olympic protests in 1968 in Mexico, when John Carlos and Tommy Smith raised the black fist in support of some of the misdeeds that were going against the black community in America. That movement took months of planning, man. You gotta go into action. You can't just speak about it. So shout out to those folks in Sacramento. That's how you make a difference. You grab people's attention. And the biggest thing, the biggest way to carry, grab somebody's attention is to affect their money. Affect their money. Yo, I got Corey Left coming up later on in the show. He's going to help us understand some of the financial implications of these Cinderella runs. UNBC, Loyola Chicago. So we're going to have some fun with that. But before we go there, I wanted to talk about this Richard Sherman deal. This Richard Sherman deal seems to have a lot of people's attention. A lot of people are speaking out about this contract. They're saying Richard Sherman got killed. That's what agents are saying. In fact, Joe Thomas, a fellow player, stepped out and spoke about this man's money. From what I understand about professional sports, you don't speak about anybody else's bread. So it was interesting to see that. And Richard Sherman is like, yo, y'all need to mind y'all business. I didn't get killed. Richard Sherman signed with the San Francisco 49ers. He got about $6 million guaranteed. Other agents like, yo, he could have got seven. Richard Sherman's like, okay, how could I have got seven? If I went around and shopped to other teams and leveraged their deal against the 49ers. Richard's like, man, I wanted to be in San Francisco. If I go play possum with those other teams, I could have lost the opportunity to be with San Fran. Now I bumped that. I went to college here in Stanford. This is where I want to be. This is where I want my family to be. So he seems to be putting a premium on happiness. How much would you pay for happiness? Priceless, right? That's one point. The other point is, if these agents could have got him more money, well, he got to pay an agent's commission, don't he? So wouldn't that negate any extra money he would have gotten, right? The man is betting on himself. He said, yo, I'm about to perform in a region that I want to play in. I'm betting on myself. This won't be my last payday. Just watch. So if he ain't worried, why is everybody else talking? I like the way Richard did that deal. He identified where he wanted to be, and he went in on it. He went for it. One of my favorite shows is a show called Pawn Stars on History. Rick Harrison, his son, Chumley, and his dad, they have a pawn shop in Las Vegas, and guys come in, try to sell stuff and get money. And they always wrestle in the price, man. This is probably why I'm not a good businessman. Because I just want to be honorable and straight up. I don't want to do the tango going back and forward. Hey, how much do you want for that? I want $1,000. Well, what's your best price? $950. Well, what's your best price? Okay, $800. Man, just tell me what you want one time, and that's it. Richard Sherman said, I want to be in San Fran. That's it. I'm not going to go to Tampa Bay and say, yo, they gave me $800. How much are you willing to give me? We ain't playing them games. So, Richard, you happy? Go for it, bro. Go for it. Richard done shocked the world before. He ain't no high first-round draft pick. He climbed through the mud, Super Bowl champion, faces everywhere, Campbell soup everywhere. So why should he listen to you guys? And yo, what's that saying? When you throw a rock, the pig that squeals is the one who got hit? Yeah, I think I pulled that out of my ass from somewhere. But, so all of these agents that are chirping, why are they chirping? Because if players start to negotiate their own deals, dudes like you will become extinct. Become extinct. Okay, right now we are joined by a gentleman by the name of Corey Left. You could catch him at johnwallstreet.com. They produce a newsletter 5 days a week. They are at the intersection of sports and business. Corey is going to help us make sense of some of the economic impact that's going on with the NCAA tournament. Corey, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining me. So I'm sitting back enjoying the tournament, and I'm watching Cinderella runs take place by schools like UMBC and Loyola Chicago. You know, it seems overnight they are just thrusted into the national spotlight. And I want to know, what was the economic impact of these small schools now being part of the national conversation?
So there's short-term impact, and then there's long-term impact, right? In the short term, UMBC was said to have generated $119 million within the first 24 hours of its first-round upset, or second round. Now, that of course, is news stories, social media buzz, things like that that have increased because of the team winning games that they weren't expected to win. Longer term, though, is where schools can really benefit, and that's on the enrollment side. When underdogs make a big splash in March Madness, we see enrollment rates increase dramatically, not the following fall, because a lot of kids have already decided on where they'll be going to school, but the fall after that. So we're talking about now the fall of 2019 is when schools like UMBC or Loyola would see a dramatic increase in enrollment. And certainly those schools can expect to see dramatic enrollment. We've seen that number be as high as 40% when Butler made its run to the 2010 championship game.
After this big upset, the school actually sees an increase in enrollment in the following year?
Well, it won't be in the immediate following year. It'll be like a year and a half later, right? So schools that win games this March won't see a dramatic increase in September or August. It'll be the August of 2019 when kids, will now have a year to kind of soak in the victory, learn more about the university, and then make a decision on, that they want to attend there.
Excellent, excellent. Again, we're joined by Corey Left. You can read him on johnwallstreet.com. They are at the intersection of sports and business. Now, I saw UMBC receive some Under Armour sneakers from the Under Armour Corporation. They got some new Steph Curry 5s. Does that have an impact for the sneaker company because it's being tweeted, it's being posted on Instagram?
There's no real immediate, for a public company like Under Armour, that kind of exposure isn't going to move the financial needle. But, of course, it does make for positive press and gets the name out there. And a company like Under Armour, which is looking to make an impact with the youth, that's, their target demo, it certainly doesn't help get, it certainly doesn't hurt them getting out on social media and that type of additional exposure that they'll get. From partnering with a UMBC who, doesn't have, let's say, a sneaker deal with a company like Nike or Under Armour.
Corey, I know with social media, we're still trying to understand and how to learn how to maximize it. But UMBC went from 5,000 followers to 91,000 followers overnight. How can a school monetize that social media following? Have we figured out exactly how that works?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure that the school is able to put a direct number on what each of those followers is worth. What I can tell you, though, is that the schools are moving merchandise. Like I said, you're seeing an increase in news stories. You're seeing an increase in social media buzz. All things like that are ultimately going to potentially help the school drive enrollment in the future? And of course, like I said, in terms of merchandising, that's an immediate short-term gain that they'll see as well. So I don't think that there's a number that you can put on each of those followers, but it certainly enhances the school's reach and certainly gives the school an opportunity to grow its grow its student base moving forward.
Right. Now, when everybody's excited about these universities and these Cinderella stories, I'm sure that motivates the alumni base and the booster base to make contributions, and they get excited as well.
It's not just merchandise that's going to be a short-term increase. You're also going to see boosters and alumni. They're going to be donating money to the program. I think we've already seen, I believe it's Loyola, has committed to building a new gym. Either it's Loyola or UMBC. One of them is building a new practice facility with the money that they're going to be receiving from this tournament run. So absolutely, the money, the boosters, the alumni, they're proud of their programs. And this kind of galvanates them to donate money and ride the wave of success, if you will.
All right, Corey, what else are you working on over there at John Wall Street?
So we wrote an interesting story today. A couple of Nike execs this week yesterday Nike released their third quarter 2018 financial results. It was a positive quarter. And one of the main announcements that came out of the earnings report was that they're going to be increasing their investment in women's footwear and apparel. That was an interesting note, because earlier this week, a couple of senior Nike execs were forced to resign after Me Too complaints. So that was an interesting story that we ran today. We also ran a story today about the NFL and how there's a class action lawsuit against the league, arguing basically that the NFL is doing what it can to evade payments that are due to former players related to the CTE and concussion settlement. So you have players that are basically saying, hey, some of these illnesses and some of these cases are being properly handled, and so things like ALS and Parkinson's claims are being awarded. But then you have cases like dementia, where only 4% of the cases that have been filed have actually been, less than 1% of the cases, just 6 cases total, have been paid out. So there's certainly some questions there in terms of whether or not the NFL has an impact on player compensation or former player compensation. And that's an interesting read as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, Corey, one last thing on the NCAA. You had mentioned Nike, and that made me think about sponsors. When these Cinderella teams go to renegotiate their sponsorship deals with apparel companies, with their bus companies, their hotel companies, does this put them in a better position to have better deals with these partners?
So that's a good question. Typically speaking, these deals go up, right? You know, every deal that gets signed increases the value of the next deal traditionally. So does it, I actually think that, a team like a Louisville or a UCLA signing a record deal probably benefits a UMBC more than, winning does in the long term, just because the dollars overall increase. But I do certainly think at the same time that it doesn't hurt, increasing the national appeal of your program.
All right, there you have it. You can catch them at johnwallstreet.com. They are at the intersection of sports and finance. Corey, where can we find you on Twitter?
We're at Howie Longshort. So, Howie Longshort is our finance analyst, and that's our Twitter handle as well.
All right, Corey, thanks for joining me.
You got it. Thanks so much.
You guys got that? These sports are moving the needle in these colleges. Right now, in March 2018, schools like UMBC, Loyola Chicago, making great runs. In fall of 2019, if history repeats itself, we're going to see an uptick in their enrollment. An uptick. People want to be around the game, want to be around the sports. So that's basketball helping a rising tide helps all ships, right? More students, more tuition, better facilities, better faculty. Like, it's not just a basketball game, huh? When people wonder why the basketball team is getting the nice fancy sweatsuits and they get to travel a certain way, because men lie, women lie, numbers don't. They delivering for the campus. When they wanted to know why the football team has all of these facilities but the crew team doesn't, they're moving the needle. And when they move the needle, it's not just helping themselves, they're helping everybody. Everybody's eating. Faculty, everybody. So that's it. Yo, that's episode number 10. Thanks to my 12-ounce sports family. Thanks for having me. Again, hit me on Twitter, at WBH Radio. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Catch you guys next week. I'm out.